You're tuned into Desperate, a podcast where two unwed women take a walk down Wisteria Lane to visit ABC's critically acclaimed show, Desperate Housewives. Retire your apron, kick off your heels, and sit back. Hit it, girls!
Hey, housewives. Welcome to Desperate. Last week, we had a bit of a technical problem with my mic, so hoping that the mic works this time and forevermore, so we no longer have to hear my echoey voice recording from my computer. But I'm Julia.
And I'm Jordan.
And this is a podcast where we take a walk down Wisteria Lane and see what we can learn from the lovely ladies of ABC's critically acclaimed show, Desperate Housewives. So far, we've just learned a lot of things about how to not get away with murder and a few things about how we are not that desperate. I think these ladies are much more desperate than us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the way this is going to go is that we are going to talk about what went down in the last couple episodes, so you're not completely lost, because it gets topsy-turvy up in here. Then we are going to recap the episode we're watching today, which is season 2, episode 12. We're halfway through the season, and it's called We're Gonna Be All Right. So keep that in mind. Make that your mantra this week. Do what you will. And then we take some time and we evaluate the episode on several different scales that we think are really fun: fuck, marry, kill, a housewife of the week, and a apple rating on a scale of 5 apples. Before we get into all that, we have a little section that we also call Desperate Deeds, where we talk about our own desperate deeds. Mm-hmm. And hopefully we have some good ones for you today to lighten up your week. It seems like this year has been a rough one so far for everybody. We are currently in the second week of it, so.
It just feels like it's 2021 part two or some shit. I'm like, come on. Or 2020 part three. I don't know how you want to look at it.
I'm not really sure. Last year, I felt a sense of renewal. I felt, like, excitement at what was to come. And then, like, everybody got vaccinated and we were kicking it. Like, went to the club all summer, just really chilled. And then I feel like winter came and there was this dark cloud over my life, over everybody's life. Mm-hmm. And then Omicron, however you say it. I don't know.
Is it Omicron? I don't know.
Whatever it is.
I have no idea.
Everybody is motherfucking sick. Everybody is scared. Nobody wants to go out. You know, we're all gaining weight again. It's winter. Got the winter 15.
Don't even talk about it.
Yeah, I know. Everybody's got their winter bodies going on. It's a tough time, but we hope you're making it through, staying safe, all that good stuff. But let's go back to a happier time, 2005. And that's where last episode was taking place. It was episode 11. And that episode was all about kisses. One More Kiss, I believe it was titled. And yeah, Lynette kisses, well, it starts off, Gabby kisses Tom, Lynette kisses Carlos, Julie kisses Zach, Susan doesn't kiss anybody, Susan kisses Mike's ass.
That was brilliant.
Bree doesn't kiss anybody. She is still, because she's mad that Justin is kissing Andrew, that her son is kissing boys. Carl chokes somebody, gets close enough to kiss Andrew.
Mm-hmm.
Just a lot goes on. But just to break it down a little bit more, with Gabby and Lynette, Gabby kisses Tom at a party, which pisses Lynette off, makes her all types of insecure. And she tells Gabby this. She's like, why are you kissing my husband? And also, I found out about John Roland, so of course I'm a little bit insecure that you might cheat.
Also, just like it's weird to see your friend kiss your partner, but okay.
Yeah, Lynette didn't even need that much detail, but she goes hard. And then they make up a bit, like, Gabby said she's sorry, but it's a fake apology, kind of. And she's like, I don't get why it's a big deal. And so Lynette kisses Carlos, like a hardcore makeout in their kitchen. And Gabby's like, okay, I get it. And then at the end, Carlos goes over to Lynette's house and is like, hey, do you want to, like, have an affair? My wife said it's okay.
Which is the most insane. I'm going to be that guy, and I'm just going to spoil it. It never gets brought up again. I'm like, low-key, that would be a friendship disaster.
Oh, my god!
Like, if my, like, husband came to you and was like, hey, if you ever want to have an affair, what? Like, you're just going to let that sit forever? They do. They treat it like it's nothing, but okay.
That's a big fucking deal.
Yeah, like, that's insane.
Oh my gosh. And I would never also be like, hey, babe, go have an affair.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure her friends are off limits, but that's just my assumption.
Yeah, I don't know that she gave him ground rules. It sounds like they didn't talk much about anything, but
yeah,
that's what happens with Lynette and Gabby. The Applewhite, there's a bit going on there. I'm trying to think, actually, if there is.
Last week, I believe there actually was a little bit. So this is the episode where Betty and Matthew, like, argue about Caleb. And then, like, she basically, like, they leave and they don't, like, they leave him there. And that guy that we didn't know anything about goes in there. Yeah. And he,
now it's coming back.
Yeah, he, like, tries to talk to Caleb, but then also has, like, a gun. And then he goes back upstairs to, like, get the gun. And as he's coming back downstairs, like, there's termites involved. Yeah, there's, like, termite damage. He falls through some stairs, shoots himself, and he's dead. So when they find him, they're like, what the fuck? So, because they get home and Caleb's just, like, eating ice cream in the living room or in the kitchen. They're like, what's going on? So they find him there. They don't know who he is. They put him in what we believe is his car. We came to that conclusion, right? That it was his car?
Yeah, it's his car, I think we decided.
And then they find out he's from Illinois, and he has, there's, like, a missed call, or there's a call coming in from Foster. So, they, like, park the truck, or they put him in the trunk, and then Caleb accidentally leaves the keys in there. And then Susan.
Or, like, Matt drops them in there.
Yeah.
Matt and Betty are the ones, like, putting the body in the truck.
Yeah. And then Susan, meanwhile, is driving, and she sees Paul and Mike going at it, and she hits the car, and the trunk pops open, and everyone sees the dead body. And then Edie's the only one. She's, like, the first one that's, like, I think the Applewhites are involved because it was right outside their house.
The whole episode, they're doing, like, little, like, notes about the Applewhites. Like, once in a while, Edie will chime in and be like, they're suspicious, right? Like, as the girls are talking. So at the end, Edie just says her theory.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, I think that there's something up with them. So that's that. But the whole reason that Susan is, like, the whole reason that Mike and Paul are fighting is because of Zach.
Mm-hmm.
Because he returned home and Susan and Julie invited him bowling. And with Mike, because I guess everybody's cool. Like, everybody's cool now with, like, nothing happening. I guess that's how you just get over it. And I wish that's how you just got over things in life. But they all go bowling. Zach's like, I don't get it because you guys should hate me. And he's right. But everybody's being weirdly chill. And then he heads home and Paul finds the bowling scores written down, which is very archaic. We, like, nobody had to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so instead of, like, I mean, I don't know what the alternative was, but he just goes and punches Mike in the face over this. And Susan sees. So And then Julie goes over and kisses Zach on the cheek at the end, which we are so confused about. So, yeah, that's that. And then is there anybody else? Bree. You want to talk about Bree?
Yeah, so I'll jump into Bree. So Bree basically, so she finds out, or she sees, like, Andrew and Justin making out, because now they do that at her house because Andrew doesn't give a fuck anymore.
They're fucking everywhere.
Yeah. And so Bree basically tells him to stay away from Justin because she doesn't believe in homosexuality and doesn't want it in her house. And Andrew's like, no, I'm going to keep seeing Justin. like, and you can't do anything about it. And so Bree's like, well, I'll send you back to camp if you don't, like, do what I say. And Andrew's like, well, he tells her that she should have another drink. So they're kind of making some hints here because we see her pouring lots of glasses of wine the past few episodes.
So, she's always got a glass next to her or a bottle nearby. And I'm like, lady loves her wine.
Oh, yeah, big time. So the next morning, or whatever day, Bree finds Andrew asleep with Justin, like they just fucked, and she starts screaming. And then Justin's like, I'm his lab partner, blah, blah, blah. And so he wakes Andrew up, and Bree's like, I need to talk to you downstairs. So Andrew comes downstairs, and she's like, if Justin doesn't leave, I'm going to call the police. And Andrew's like, well, if you do that, then I'm going to tell them you murdered George. And she's like, what? And Bree says that she doesn't think that she doesn't think that he'll actually blackmail her, but just to be safe, she hires Carl, like, unofficially or officially. Yeah, I'm not sure.
Which I'm like, why are you telling one more person about this?
I don't know. But Carl agrees to represent her, and they have, like, a talk. And they talk about, like, her involvement, I guess, in George's death. Because I guess she kind of killed him, but not really.
There's, like, nothing they could do. Yeah. I swear to God. Because she just, like, saw him. Like, she could say that he was art. It's all, like, hearsay. Like, they don't have any proof.
I mean, like, not only that, but is it illegal to let someone die from suicide? Like, is that technically illegal?
No. She's so, not, like, a medical professional. Like, what is she going to do?
And, like, for all they know, she just maybe didn't believe that he took the pills. Like, I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of ways out of it, even if he did. I thought
they were sugar pills.
Yeah. So, and then it turns out he was, like, stalking her, so she could argue, like, well, he was stalking me, like, and he was always manipulating me. You know what I mean? Like, I just feel like they could let Andrew rat on her and it wouldn't do anything.
It wouldn't matter, but...
Yeah. Andrew was like, fuck it, I'll lie, basically. And so Bree's like, well, if you lie, I'll sue you. And so Carl, like, tells Bree to get the fuck out. Not really. He tells her to leave the room. He, like, throws Andrew against the wall, Rex style, and basically threatens him and tells him to respect his mother. And if he doesn't, like, he's gonna fucking handle that shit with his fists. And Bree just smiles from the kitchen as she drinks her wine, which she never has seen without this episode.
I feel like this happens to Andrew a lot. Like, chokeholds are, like, a thing for him.
I mean, he's kind of a little brat, so I'm not surprised. I feel like I'd throw him up against a wall.
But I love it.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty much what went down. We can just talk about our desperate deeds now. Let's just head right in. Yeah, full speed in. Ahead.
I'm down.
I have one, because I was reminded last week when Gabby was talking about how she made her cheerleading squad wear no panties, which I find concerning.
Nothing like a bunch of underage cheerleaders with no panties on and short skirts.
Yeah, nothing like that. I was telling Jordan I'm watching Euphoria for the first time, so that feels very Euphoria. Mm-hmm. Something like that would happen. But my desperate deed is that in college, I was in a sorority, surprise, surprise to no one. And we had, like, formals and stuff, or, like, I mean, they were just, like, dances. I guess they were, I don't know what to call, like, how to explain it. Yeah, it's just an event that, like, a date invites you to, or you invite a date to specifically. And it's not, like, an open party and, like, you have to be there with your date. So I went to a formal at somebody's frat, or got invited somehow, and it wasn't even, like, with a guy that I was, like, into. I just, sometimes their girls would be like, this guy needs a date, you want to go with him? And you're like, I guess, and you go and, like, hang out and party. But I, like, last minute got the invite, I think, and I, like, rode my little bike over to my sorority house and was getting ready, but I wasn't wearing underwear for some reason that day, and I lived, like, a mile and a half away from my sorority house. I had already ridden my bike and, like, was already, like, committed to, like, going and getting ready and, like, had to be there by a certain time. And, like, I was borrowing a dress from somebody and I, like, realized that I didn't have any underwear with me. And I was, like, I have to be at this formal in, like, 20 minutes and mm-hmm. I don't have enough time to like go. I'm not going to ride my bike home underwearless in this dress. Like, I don't know what to do. So basically I went to this formal without any underwear wearing this dress for the entire night. Ugh. And my date like tried to spin me at one point, and like, you know how your dress, like the dress I was wearing was like flowy too, and
no.
It like and it like I was like, oh my, I was trying so hard to like hold it down. I'm like, oh my god. So I was so desperate not to dress,
yeah,
not to go home and get underwear. I spent like 3 hours at this party in a dress with no underwear getting trash.
God, it was probably harder and harder to hide it as the night went on.
Oh, yeah. And I definitely like made out with that guy at the end of the night and like straddled him, no underwearless. And it was not cool. And I hope that he forgot about it. I hope that's like not a memory. I hope he like forgot that entire night. Like,
what if he listens to this podcast and you just reminded him?
Just reminded him.
If you're out there,
like,
sir.
He's like, oh, she was not wearing underwear that night.
It he's
was
wondered like, this whole time.
Dude, I felt so uncomfy. I've never felt so uncomfortable. But I was not about to ride my bike home. I had already ridden it too far. Like, no. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's my desperate deed.
Man.
Just went commando.
Yeah. that's a good one. I don't think I have a story like that, but my desperate deed, I don't know if I've told it on here, but hopefully I haven't. So it was a few years ago, you and I were going to the art gallery.
Yeah, I remember that.
And in the car, I was like drinking Starbucks. And the lid, like, wasn't on properly, or, like, this, you know where the seam in the Starbucks cup is?
Yeah.
It typically tends to, like, leak a little bit right there.
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah. And I was wearing, like, this new white shirt, and I, like, dripped it all over my shirt. And I don't live in LA, so I'd driven an hour to meet you there, and I was like, well, shit, I don't have any fucking thing. Like, what do I do? And so I, like, turned the shirt around. And it kind of just looked like a high, like, collar style. Like, it looked... You had no idea that I was wearing a backward shirt until I told you that I had spilled coffee all over.
I don't even remember you telling me that. I have a picture of you from that day.
Yeah, and I had like, a sweater, like, a cardigan thing that I was wearing over it. Thank God. But, yeah, so I just wore my shirt backwards. And you actually even commented, you're like, I really like that shirt.
I don't know if you ever told me. I have a picture and your skin looks gorgeous and flawless. I'll never forget that picture. I'm like, she looks so gorgeous. And you're wearing, yes, it's like a high neck. Yeah. Oh my God, I know the exact outfit you're talking about.
It's a backward shirt. So in my desperate moment, I was like, well, I gotta make this shit work. So luckily it kind of looked like something I'd get at like Forever 21. I don't fucking know.
Yeah,
but
it was a great outfit. We have like tons of pictures from that day.
Yeah, because we went to that little like rooftop bar afterwards.
Yeah,
yeah,
a sleeper, a great bar.
Yeah, that was cool.
Oh my
god. Yeah, that day I was definitely wearing a backward shirt because I spilled coffee all over it.
A lot.
And
that
was like, oh, go ahead.
I don't know. What are you gonna say?
Oh, like, there was, like, a weird period there where, like, that kept happening to me. Like, I would drink Starbucks, and I'd accidentally, like, the seam would be where the opening was, and I'd spill it. And it took, like, 4 times before I finally learned.
Yeah. No, I don't think it's you. I think it was a bad period for Starbucks, probably.
Yeah. They need to fix their cup game.
Yeah. So, some desperate fashion moments, for sure.
Yeah.
Or lack of fashion. still better than what was going on in 2005 for fashion.
Oh, yeah.
So, oof. Well, we are going to go ahead and watch this episode, and we'll be right back to break it all down. But before we go, make sure you buckle up.
Buckle up. Susan fakes an illness to flirt with a cute young doctor. Lynette's kids get chickenpox, which leads to an unexpected standoff with Tom. Gabby's past comes to haunt her. Bree gets arrested.
Okay. I feel like the Growls are being a little bit racist against the Applewhites.
They're very quick to be suspicious of them.
I mean, they're at the blood drive, and Mary Alice Young has this voiceover about a sickness in the neighborhood, and then the camera, like, is that the Applewhites the only people of color besides Gabby?
That's what I'm saying. Like the one black family they bring in the neighborhood, they have it like this. I'm like,
ooh. Yeah, they have them like low-key be the villains in a way. Like, it just...
And, like, suspicious immediately.
I know.
And I'm like,
and like, not a part of the group. Like, they don't make an attempt at all to make them, like, integrated. It's no. So, oh my gosh. So,
and her conversation with Brie was so fucking weird. Oh my God. We'll get to it. But
yeah. So, everybody is, this episode's all about sickness in one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
But we start off with Susan, and maybe we'll just start off with her storyline.
Yeah.
Because it's the worst and it makes me hate her more than I've ever, which I keep saying, but it keeps like growing. Like if I was at level one earlier, like I'm at a level 12 now.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll get into it. So Mary Alice Young is here to kick us off per usual. She says, Jim Halverson, who is a guy that looked really familiar to me, and we looked up his IMDb, and he's been on Grey's Anatomy and Law & Order SVU, which I'm a huge fan of, and he's so, so familiar. He's had lots of parts, but his name is Jim Halverson here, mm-hmm. and he had little to offer women. He wasn't rich or smart or handsome, which I'm like, Mary Alice, do you have to come for him like this? Like,
I know, she's fucking aggressive. Like, this was mean. I'm like, when they did the casting call for this part, they're like, you have to play a huge loser.
Yeah, they're like,
and just, you have to be ugly.
Yeah, just okay guy. It was a casting call for just average guy, I guess.
Yeah.
He's not, like, unattractive, but he's also just not, like, a 10. I don't know. So he gets set up for a blind date. So, like, when he got set up for a blind date, he made the tragic decision to try and be funny, which, like, if you're not funny, just don't try to be. Like, don't ever try to be funny. Just, like, go with the flow, you guys.
Don't test new material.
On a first date. You could test new material with if you've been, like, if he's your boyfriend or girlfriend or whatever, but, like...
There comes a point when you're in a relationship where you can be, like, you can do the risky material because you could call each other out and it's not handle, weird.
Yeah. And you can also handle not getting the laughs. Like, mm-hmm. if it falls flat, you're just, like, with the one person that's, like, comfortable.
Yeah. Exactly. So,
it's okay, but... This was risky. Jim Halverson took the risk, and it didn't work out well. So when he got a date with Susan, he was, like, surprised, and he immediately makes a joke about her age. Like, about, he's like, how old are you? And she says, guess, I think, which I also think is a terrible response. But he makes a joke about her being old, and then he tried a racial humor. He makes a Chinese joke. And then he tried to be risque, and he made a rectal joke. And then he tried gentle teasing and compared her to a Nazi. And I'm like, these writers just went hard.
They made him the worst possible human on the planet. I was like, this is brutal.
Yeah. And so just when he thought the date couldn't get any worse, it did. And they end up at the hospital after they butt heads.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a very Susan thing. I was like, maybe this is who she's meant to be with, because... That's a very clumsy Susan move herself. Yeah. So I'm like, has she met her match?
And she says really inappropriate things sometimes, too.
Oh, my God, totally. So confusing. But
do you think he's like a male Susan?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think she hated him so much. She hated him so much because she saw herself.
Facts.
Facts. It hurts. It hurts when you meet somebody just like you.
Yeah.
But... She said, they're at the end of the doctor. She is so disgusted. Like, she wants nothing to do with this date at this point. And, I mean, I think it's even nice of her to attend to the hospital with him. She could have dipped out. I would have been, like, dropping him off. I'd be like, bye, best of luck to you. But she's in there. There's a hot, quote-unquote, hot doctor. I feel like we're being gaslit into thinking he's hot. But,
like, they do this on Sex and the City, too. I'm like, low-key, I don't think he's that much hotter, just younger than the guy she's on the date with. And, like, if anything, like, that guy's not attractive and this guy's, like, in that same category, I feel like.
They were, like, definitely the same level of hotness.
Like, the doctor, to me, he's, like, very boyish looking and not in, like, a cute way.
Oh, yeah. He was not looking, like, he didn't look like a doctor, first of all. Not that you can, like, look like, I guess, like, there's not a look like anybody could be a doctor, but, like, casting-wise, like, you know, television doctor-wise, weird casting choice.
Yeah, I agree.
If you had switched them, honestly, nothing would have been different. If, I, like...
That's what I'm saying. Like, I didn't think the opening guy was, like, ugly. He was wasn't just, like,
ugly.
He was just, like, middle-aged man. Like, yeah. I don't know. He was fine. Like,
I thought he was, like, yeah, if I was a middle-aged woman, he's, like, low-key attractive. I would have been like, damn. But, yeah. Like... So they're there. The doctor's like, how'd this happen? Susan's like, it was an accident. And he's, Jim is still trying to make jokes. And it's like, you can stop now.
Yeah. Please. He says
it, yeah. He's like, in some cultures, it's a mating ritual. It's just so cringe. And then Susan's like, doctor, can I talk to you over here? And she like begs him and grabs his white coat and like asks him to commit her for the night. And I'm like, Susan, you can just leave. Like, you owe this guy nothing.
No, you the don't. Show's, like, teaching women. Like, you have to have an excuse. Like, yeah, what the like, fuck?
You don't have to have an excuse. You didn't like the date. You guys hit your each other's heads. He's at the hospital now. You can be like, hey, I have a daughter I have to go take care of. Or so, like, what the... yeah, whatever. So she's begging the doctor for some reason to leave. And he says that he can't admit her. And then... the doctor says he needs to keep Jim there to run some tests. And he's like, Susan, you're good to go. And then Jim catches a look between Susan and the doctor and got the feeling the joke was on him. Ha, ha, ha.
I just feel like, I don't know. Did he really think their date was going super well? Like, she doesn't like you. It's first date. He's acting like that's his wife or girlfriend that's, like, hitting on the doctor.
Yeah. I'm like, you literally don't even know her. Like, do you even know, remember her name?
Yeah.
Like, I don't even... I feel like that guy doesn't give a fuck, but whatever. Mm-mm. So, we don't see any more of Jim for the episode, but we see a lot of Dr. Ron. But... we could talk about the blood drive, because after we have our intro, we come up... back to a little blood drive going on, like we were saying, where we get the first inkling that there's a bit of a racial undertone going on with the Adelaides. So it's the blood drive was a tradition on Wisteria Lane. Most came from about health and well-being. The girls showed up for a different reason. They thought the street was infected with a different kind of sickness, and they wanted to discuss what they could do. And that's when they pan over to the Adelaides, and I'm like, whoa, that's like wild.
And that's totally something I feel like that like racist white people say when a black neighbor moves in, like, I gotta get rid of the sickness, something's
very like, invading. Yeah, very 1960s of them here. Not 2005. So the sickness, I said the sickness is the Applewhites, I guess.
Yeah.
So that's what's going on. The gals are talking and they're like staring at the Applewhites, and Gabby says they've been so nice since they found the body. Edie doesn't trust friendly women. Susan knows they have something to do with the body, because Susan, I guess, is so, you know, she's, what's the
she's
word
perceptive,
for it?
But yeah, I don't believe that.
I guess.
For so, once in her life, the one time. Yeah. It's about a black family.
So they tell Bree to call her detective friend, which I'm like, the one that investigated, like, Rex's death. And that's what Bree says too. She's like, we're not really like friends, but whatever. And then the Applewhites come over being like way too nice, and they bring up Susan's birthday, and I thought this was gonna be where the episode went.
And oh yeah, me not. Too.
They just low-key, like, they're like, Susan's birthday, and she like invites herself, and Matt as they walk away, Matt's like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, they don't like you. And we should have left. Caleb, we don't know what Caleb told that dude. Like, we need to move. And Betty's like, all our money's tied up in this fucking house, so we have nowhere to move. And it's also suspicious if we move, so now we need a fucking story.
Yeah.
And that's that. So that's the girls together. But to cover the rest of Susan's story, like we were talking about Dr. Ron, this whole episode she spends trying to get a date with Dr. Ron in the most desperate of ways by pretending to be sick.
Oh my god, yeah.
And
okay, quick question.
Yeah.
So Susan's spending what? Thousands of dollars with these hospital visits. I have to say, in the beginning of the episode when she was like, admit me overnight, I'm like, aren't you gonna get a bill for that though? Like, isn't that like super expensive? Because she doesn't, I doubt she has insurance because she doesn't have like a job. She doesn't have like insurance through her job, so she pays out of pocket for it.
Dang, you got a good point.
And I'm like, nope, sorry. This is where I'm like, this is the one thing I don't buy is her going to the hospital repeatedly with like and not panicking about it.
Yeah, she's like, you got Oscar insurance, like you got some shit, like some Medi-Cal or some Medicare. I don't know.
Yeah, it was weird. That really bothered me this episode.
No, I fucking feel you. Like it, I didn't even think about that till now, but you're right. Anytime. Those doctor bills add up to get an MRI. She gets a motherfucking MRI this episode. Like that's a CAT scan. That's a lot of money.
Exactly. And it was just like suspending my disbelief just for that part alone. I was kind of like, come on, like make the story a little bit more like reasonable. But anyway, keep going.
Yeah. No, basically that's like her gist. Like she tries to get a date with him and spoiler, she fucking does. And it's unbelievable because it's not realistic. Mm-hmm. Any guy would find her completely annoying and unhinged. And this guy apparently doesn't. But it starts when like Dr. Ron does he calls their house for a follow up and Julie and Susan are like, oh my God, like hot doctor wants to see you. And like, I don't get that because they were like, Susan wasn't even at the hospital for herself. Mm-hmm. Like she was there for her, like that guy.
Yeah.
But Julie like gasses her up about it, but also calls her desperate, but is like, guys like you, so go for it. And like,
I mean, she's not wrong, weirdly enough. But
I mean, she covered it all. Yeah, yeah. That was the most accurate statement. She's like, oh my God, mom, like, guys like you, but it's a little bit desperate. It's true. So at the doctor, like, the nurse is doing the checkup. Like, you know how you go to the doctor and you, like, see him for 5 minutes maybe.
Yeah. And they're always late, even though I know for a fact they're not in there with patients because they are only in there for 5 minutes, but whatever.
They're browsing. Yeah, browsing. But she's, like, upset by this. She's like, oh, my God, like, Dr. Ron didn't really want to see me. And she's like, the nurse is like, he only comes in if there's a real problem. And so Susan makes up all these things so that there's a problem. And he ends up coming in.
Yeah.
So then she tries to ask him out to coffee. She's like, maybe it's all the coffee I drink that's causing this. And he's like, I don't like coffee. And she's like, what about juice? Do you like juice? And he's like, I want to get you in for an MRI. And he's like, I have to be there for the MRIs. Or he, like, grabs her arm and it's flirty. And I'm like, whatever. So she ends up agreeing to the MRI because I guess he's there for every one of them. So she goes and she's like, where is Dr. Ron? And then she undresses in the MRI room and there's a weird, like, two-way mirror. I don't know if that's, like, realistic when you get an MRI.
That there's, I have like, no idea. Like a weird.
Like, yeah. Like a cop one.
That was weird to me. I was like, is this really how it works? But they just needed a reason, I guess, for Susan to show off that she's skinny. I don't know.
Yeah, so she, like, undresses, and the other weird tech is, like, watching her undress. And Dr. Ron comes in, and he's like, she doesn't need to undress. And
yeah, and he, like, low-key lets the guy kind of keep watching for a little bit. And I was like, okay, y'all are creeps. He does not like, stop what's happening right away. Let's just say that.
He's like, what's going on? A beat? Like,
yeah.
They just keep watching her.
No, that like, show is so weird.
She's like half naked, like trying to put on a sheet, basically, a dust cover.
Yeah.
So I didn't, like, it's making me laugh now because it is so ridiculous.
It was, like, insanely ridiculous. Like, I was like, what are we watching right now? Like, sexual harassment, stupidity.
They didn't even try that hard with the setup of the room. Like, it's an empty room with, like, a machine in it. That looks unrealistic. A two-way mirror that is also unrealistic. They're, like, talking to her on an intercom.
Like, it's that wild. Part makes sense because you stay out of the room for it. But at the same time, though, I'm like, but why are they? I don't know. I was very offended by the lack of professionalism by this doctor and his MRI tech.
Yeah. So fuck that MRI tech. And they say that she's gonna have to sit in this thing for 45 minutes, and that's what it's like with like these like CAT scans and MRIs. You have to sit in this machine forever. And on the intercom, like, Susan asks him out on a date, and she's like, hey, I just want to, do you like Italian food or something? Like, she asks him out, and he doesn't fucking answer. The weird, like, sexual harassment MRI tech is like, oh, he got a call from his girlfriend, so he's going to be gone a minute. And Susan's like,
he lets her word vomit, though, about that date for so long, and then finally is like, oh, he stepped out a long time ago. I'm like, why didn't you interrupt her?
Way too long.
Yeah, that was weird.
Yeah, she calls it like a celebratory victory dinner that her everything is going to be fine because she knows she's not sick because she lied about her symptoms like a psychopath.
Mm-hmm.
So next thing that happens, Dr. Ron makes a house call and says they need to talk because he got the test results and he like can't figure out what's wrong because there's nothing wrong. And he's going on and on like he's so concerned about her health and he's like, we're going to get through this. We're going to figure it out. And, like, I've looked into it. I was up all night. And Susan's like, there's nothing fucking wrong. I'm not sick. I just made it up because I want to go on a date with you. And he's like, what? He's like, he's like, what's wrong with you? At first, he has the right reaction. He says, what's wrong with you? Like, why would you do that? And she's like, I'm not good at meeting men. I thought you were cute, and I thought you might think I'm cute, and you're a doctor, and that's sexy. And that's legitimately what she says. And
she's like, you got money. And he's
she's like, you went to med school. Like, so he said, I was up all night, like, looking at books and, like, worried about you. Mm-hmm. And she's like, oh, my God, you were worried? And he's, like, getting up to, like, get out. Like, to leave. Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, I was worried that you might die. And I'm, like, worried about people that I like. And she's like, you like me? And I couldn't help but cringe, like, so hard at that line. It makes me so upset. And he's like, well, yeah. And she's like, what about your girlfriend? And he was like, what? And he's like, it was one date. And Susan's like, well, maybe we can go out. So, like, she literally, like...
Yeah.
I don't, it just blew my mind. Like, nobody's reading the room. Like, she's not mm-hmm. I don't get it. It just made me malfunction, like, how this went down. And so she, like, chases him out, asking him if they can go out. And then he asks her out to sushi. And they...
And like, she just gets everything she wants. I don't...
Like, she gets a date. I'm, like, still malfunctioning about it. Like, because it's so... Like, I told you, this is bananas. This is bonkers.
Well, this is teaching women bad habits, okay? The show is not a good...
This isn't good. This is not realistic.
Yeah.
So, that's what's up with Susan this week. Mm-hmm. And, yep, my malice towards her just keeps growing. So, that's why I'm at.
Yeah.
I'll let you talk about Tom and Lynette because we have differing opinions, I believe.
Yeah, this might get wild, everybody. So Tom calls Lynette and he tells her she needs to come home because it's an emergency. So she gets home and he's like, the kids have chicken pox. And he's like, she's like, what the fuck? That's not an emergency. Like, okay, big what? And he's like, I've never had it. So like, and I don't want to get it. And so he's like, you need to stay home from work and like take care of them because like, I can't. And so Lynette's like, well, so basically Lynette gets frustrated and then he, like, they talk about it and he explains that chickenpox cause like sterility in men or could.
Yeah. Carlos like rolls by one day.
Yeah.
And like, he's like, what's going on with you guys hanging out? I don't know. They just start talking about it and mm-hmm. he makes a comment about shooting blanks and he says something about it. That's what we learn.
Yeah.
But also, I have to note that they wound up because men are babies when they're sick.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about this part.
Men are fucking babies when they're sick. And
this proves
he's, like, begging Lynette to stay home. And she's like, I'm not staying home. Like, I support this family. And he said they wound up in marriage counseling the last, when he had strep.
Yeah. He's like, remember what happens when I get sick? I'm like, oh, so you're threatening her to be a big man baby instead of maturing and, like, not being that way when you're sick?
Okay. Ladies out there, you fucking know. Ladies out there, you know your man is sick if you have a man.
Well, your man should at least pretend that he's not like that, but no. Tom is just like, he's using it like a threat.
They always pretend they're not like that, and then they get sick, and it's like the most pathetic thing ever.
Yeah.
The text I got a text that said, I got a call, and I was like, I knew my boyfriend was sick, and he was like, he calls me, and I'm like, hey, sorry, I'm like busy right now. I'll call you back in a little bit. He's like, I was just walking, and I was calling to tell you that walking is really hard right now. That's the kind of shit they do when they're sick.
No, and they're little brats. They're just brats, and it pisses me off. I'm like, but yes,
let's continue with Lynette. Sorry.
Yeah. No, I totally forgot about that part. But basically, Tom is like, it's like, she's like, well, why does it matter if you're going to be sterile? Like, you're not going to have any more kids. And he's just like, oh, no. At first, he's like, it's a survival instinct. And I'm like, get bent. Like, okay. Like, what the fuck? I don't like the way he words some of his reasons. But basically, basically, he's like, if you were to die, I would want to, like, restart my life and my family. And he has, like, this whole plan. And so Lynette gets, like, really, like, insecure. I think she gets, like, insecure about it more than upset, because he's, like, first, okay, I'll come back to my opinion on this, but Lynette gets pissed, and she's like, well, I think you should get a vasectomy, because we're not going to have any more kids, and she's, like, popping off about all this stuff, and he's just like, well, if I, like, I want to restart a family, I want a chance at, like, a new life, like, if you were to die, and she's like, why do you have this plan? And he's like, well, it's just a backup plan. She's like, I don't have a fucking backup plan. Why are you thinking about this so much? And he's like, well, I'm not, but, and he, like, in classic Tom fashion, he's not very, like, articulate, I think, with, like, how he's expressing this. I feel like there's a better way to say, like, well, if something were to happen, you know what I mean? I don't know. I just, he says it so casually, like, it's nothing. And
he's,
I think
not
that's
a word. He's not a wordsmith, no. He doesn't have a silver tongue.
Yeah, so then they circle back to it later, and, like, Lynette is, like, super fucking bothered that he, like, won't get a vasectomy. And she's like, to be fair, she does admit that she's being crazy, but she's just like, basically, if you love me, you're gonna get a vasectomy, because that's what married people do. We fucking go out of each other. She says we go out of our way to, like, calm irrational fears. And she's like, basically begging him. She's like, I really need you to do this. I don't want to live this life thinking, like, you're just waiting around for this backup plan. So Tom, like, agrees, but he's very angry about it. He looks like a mad little kid when he says fine. But, so then, Tom comes home because he backs out of doing it. Just like any man who doesn't want to do it would do. And he's like, I can't do it. And he's like, I just feel like I'm being emasculated and I'm losing, like, my manlyhood. And he's like, then he goes on this whole spiel about how he doesn't provide for the kids. He doesn't make the money. So the last thing I have is this, like, ability to squirt semen out of my dick, I guess. And
oh my, like, God.
I think that's why this bothers me so much, but I'll get to it. So she's like, staying home doesn't make you less of a man. That's crazy. And then he's like, well, you expected me to calm your irrational fear. Like, this is mine. And she's like, okay. She just kind of stares at him and says, okay. And does, like, her, like, something that I've noticed is when Lynette gets scared that she, like, might lose Tom, she kind of gets this, like, face and, like, literally leans away from him. And she does that in this. She goes, okay. Like, she gets, like, this weird, I don't know how to describe it. But that kind of happens. And Tom, like, she's like, are you unhappy, basically? And he kind of admits that he is. And then, like, she tries to talk to him about it. And he's just,
she's
like,
what are we going to do about that? He says, I don't know. And she's like, wait. But he just, like, walks upstairs.
Yeah. And so that's their story. I am Team Lynette on this one. Julia is Team Tom on this one.
I'm Team Tom. I think it's, like, your body, your choice, even if you're a man. Like, if a guy was telling me to get a hysterectomy because he felt like I don't know, just for whatever reason, like, if I don't want a hysterectomy, I don't want a hysterectomy. I don't, like, Tom has every right to feel like he wants to have another family in the future or have the chance at that. So I don't feel like there's anything wrong with that. I think if they're not going to have any kids, like, he needs to be more careful about, they need to be careful about their sexual health together. That's a two-person ordeal. But I think it's wrong to, like, demand your partner do anything that they don't want to do with their body.
I agree with that. However, Tom in season one straight up refuses to wear condoms, so he expects her to be on birth control, which fucks up her body. So I think, like, it's very hypocritical because, like, we know for a fact that birth control, like, takes a toll on women's bodies, and he fully expects her to do that. And, like, there's a whole episode where he, like, won't wear condoms. Like, he won't. It's in season one when it's, like, not... It's, like, a while after she's given birth to Penny, and he comes home trying to have sex with her, and he's like, let's just risk it, because she can't be on birth control yet.
That was, like, episode one, but I feel like it wasn't a whole episode about that. It was, like, the end of it, and, like, they just say
no,
that.
No, the whole episode was about how she was pissed at him because he said, let's risk it. And then he's,
that,
like...
That was at the end of the episode.
No.
It was not, like, a whole thing.
But the point is, though,
it was, like,
he
when she goes to the grocery store and, like, it's about her being, like, a stay-at-home mom and how she used to be, like, it's not, like, the whole episode wasn't about it.
No, but I think it also is, like, the point is, though, that he, like, expects her to use, like, for her body to be where it needs to be for them to not have kids, but he's not taking any steps in his life to do it.
Yeah.
And I think, like, I don't like her reasoning for him getting a vasectomy. I think it's stupid for her to be like, well, I don't want you to start another family. But, like, I think that his reasoning is kind of weird. And I think that her, her reasoning is also not right. But at this, I guess, like, for me, Tom has a bad way of expressing why he doesn't want to do things. And I think it's a bit insensitive. And I also think, like, Tom didn't want to go back to work. Like, he didn't want to do that. So Lynette did it. And I get that she got him fired, but he also kind of quit his job. And, like, he wasn't happy there to begin with. And I think this is a reoccurring theme we've seen throughout the first season and a half, is that Tom, whenever Tom's unhappy, Lynette has to do what he wants to do. And here we are again, where now he doesn't want to be home anymore, even though that's what he wanted, and had her go back to work. And he's unhappy. And I just feel like... And then he expresses, okay, well, you have to calm my irrational fear. Okay, so now they're at an impasse because they both have these irrational fears. Whose irrational fear is more important? And it comes... And Tom basically makes
it
clear that his
is. I don't think that it has to be this ultimatum with an irreversible... Like, you can't reverse a vasectomy.
Yeah, you can.
And if you do, though, it's, like, really invasive. Like, I don't think that he should have to do that, like, to prove this. Like, I think that they should find some other sort of compromise. Like, Lynette's allowed to feel however she wants to feel, but... that's not working for him. Like, they should figure something else out that works for both of them. And, like, he can certainly go back to work. It seems like that works for both of them.
Well, and their kids are at daycare now. He's not even doing anything. I think, like, it's hard because
I don't think I think he has every right to say, like, that is, like, my last, like, shred of masculinity that I feel that I have. Whether it, people, universe, like, whatever, people can interpret that however they want, but he's saying, personally, that's, like, my last shred of masculinity that I
feel. But it's, like, but he gave up. But the examples he used for masculinity are things that he chose to give up.
Yeah, I mean.
So I think it's a bit hypocritical for him to act like he can't do that. Like, he's saying it like he's being held hostage at the house. And, like, this vasectomy is, like, the last ditch effort. It's like, no, you've had the option this whole time.
I mean, I think, though, they're in this, like, it's also hard to make those big changes again. Like, Lynette's already at work. It's a whole interview process for time to go back to work. I can see that him, like, in that moment right then and there is, like, those are his examples. It's not, like, I think he's aware that he had the choices, but it's also a huge conversation to, like, shift their lives yet again back to what it was.
I guess for me, like, I just feel like every big decision they've made has been what Tom wants. And I guess it's just frustrating to see him stand there and act like that's not the case.
Well, I don't think he wanted to be fired from his job because Lynette, or whatever, he quit, but he also had an outburst because Lynette went behind his back and did a bunch of fucked up shit. So Lynette is not all holy here.
No, and I don't think she's all holy. I don't. But I do think that when Tom wants something, he pulls these cards that put Lynette, like, this is what I'm saying, like, she's sitting there like, are you unhappy? And it turns into all this, but it's like, okay, well, he needs to be willing then to, like, communicate with her and then, like, work on that. Yeah. Because she had no idea that he was, like, unhappy with his whole life. And then he drops that bomb and is like, bye. And it's like, okay, that's not how that works, though.
Takes his bureau stairs.
And I just feel like he's, like, he kind of throws tantrums. And this is, like, an exact, like, this is just him being really childish to me. And like I said, I don't think, like, I agree with you that you should have autonomy over your body. I'm not Team Lynette in the sense that she should, like, make him get a vasectomy. But I'm Team Lynette in the sense that I don't think Tom is, like,
I think it's even nice that he walked his ass down to the doctor and made an appointment. I think that's nice of him because I fucking bitch get a vasectomy or get a hysterectomy. I would have been like, excuse me.
Yeah, but I also just feel like he's so willy-nilly about, like, them having babies. And, like, I don't know. I just wasn't a huge fan of, like, how he handled his emotions in this episode and how he communicated to Lynette about them. Because it started out with, he made it very clear that the issue, like, he handled it so nonchalantly until the very, very end when he's like, I'm unhappy. And I'm like, yeah. But that's not at all what you were saying up until this point. So obviously Lynette's going to be in the dark and not know how to handle the situation until you communicate it properly to her.
Yeah, well, typical man to not fucking say anything until the 11th hour. So, yeah. Am I surprised? No.
So, I don't know. I have, like, a very... I'll just stop talking because I don't want to, like, go into the future on accident.
Careful. Don't spoil it.
I know. I'm trying to be careful with my opinions on Tom.
Moral of the story, he didn't get his vasectomy and he walked upstairs to pout. But we can talk about a guy who did take action for his woman, which is Carlos. Mm-hmm. Because Gabby spends this episode upset that Carlos will not beat up her ex-boyfriend of X amount of years ago. Because he has nude pics of her online, which, whatever, who cares? Mm-hmm. But her sex-addicted gardener brings it up to her. I guess he has an addiction to porn. Mm-hmm. And he's trying to talk to her, and Gabby doesn't have the time of day because she thinks he's tattletailing on the other gardener. But... I don't really know what's going on there. Basically, he gives her a piece of paper. It's a printout. He printed out a nude picture of Gabby, and it's like, I found this online because basically my wife Bonita left me because she says that I have an illness and I need to get help. And she's like, oh, my God, what's going on? He's like, nothing. I just like to look at pretty ladies online, and sometimes they're not dressed. So he's got a low-key porn addiction. And he says, only the classy websites, but there's some weird stuff out there. And he says, I went on a new website last night, and there's a lady in a pointy hat. And he hands her the picture, and it's fucking her. And he says, the lighting's great, and I'm dying. She's on a porn website, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He wants her to sign the pic, too. And I want to see the pic. We only see, like, glimpses of it, but basically it's a Santa hat. When he says pointy hat, it's a Santa hat. So we could call this a Christmas episode. So she shows Carlos the picture, and she says it was when I was dating this photographer. She dumped this photographer for Carlos. So interesting. I guess this is who she was with before. He looks at it and he's like, what the fuck is this? And she says it's his website, Scott's website, with me on it. And he's like silent, and she's like, say something. And he's like, I don't know what to say. Yeah. Oh my God. And she's like, it's not funny. It's like a naughty Christmas gift for my boyfriend at the time. Carlos clicks through. He's pretty horrified. And so he says, I guess we can just call the lawyers. Like, I don't know what you want me to do about this. Like, best of luck. He's still thinking about Sister Mary Bernard. And
yeah, he's still heartbroken over that loss. He's
still heartbroken that she's in Botswana. And she says he owns the pictures, and he's like, I don't know, I guess we're screwed. And Gabby is like, what the fuck? We're not screwed. We're not necessarily. And she says, here's what I'm thinking. Scott's a coward. Like, you could scare him, rough him up a little bit to take them down. And he says, you made this mistake. You should fix it. And she's like, I'm not strong. And he's like, I literally am in, like, anger management. So, I can't do that. And Gabby is like, can you, like, call somebody from prison and end scene? there's our button. And next thing we know, Carlos is grabbing the paper and Gabby is like being super nice to the gardeners. And she starts doing her yoga outside. But before she does, she literally takes off all her clothes. And she's like, if everybody on Wisteria Lane is going to see it, since you don't care, like, who leers at me or not. And he's like, I'm not going to beat up this guy. And she's like, if you don't, people are going to see a lot more of me. So, wow, Gabby, pretty low. But
yeah.
Then the gardener accidentally cuts off the other one's finger because he's staring at Gabby's tits. So that happens. Next thing, they're at the guy's place, Scott's place, and Carlos says that he can't do it. He thought he could, but he can't. And she's like, you promised. And he's like, well, since I've been out of prison, I've been trying to be good Catholic, yada, yada. And she's like, well, you could just go to extra long mass tomorrow. And I like that solution. I'm like, Gabby's thinking on her feet here. Just make up for that tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, I'm going to be humiliated if you don't get the pictures. They go back and forth. He ends up going in there, and they end up, well, before he does that, they pull out the, if you loved me, you would do this. And Carlos is like, if you loved me, you wouldn't ask me to.
Mm-hmm.
And they do that, and Carlos thinks it's a little bit funny. But he loves the shit out of her, which I think is cute, and he goes in there. And when I see the guy that used to be her ex-boyfriend, I am fully disgusted.
They don't do her any favors. I'm like, they couldn't find someone a little bit better? Like, what
the She fuck? Was a model, like, and this is the dude that she was supposedly with. It shocked me, so.
Yeah.
Can't believe it. I'm floored. But Carlos goes in, and he's just like, can you take those pictures down? And the dude's like, oh, yeah, sure. And I'm like, wow, that was easy. But then he low-key insults Gabby because he's like, whatever, it doesn't get a lot of traffic anyway. Like, she's not really good for the internet. And Carlos is like, what are you talking about? He's like, they want fantasy, not fashion. And she's not rocking any curves. And he's like, excuse me, my wife has a perfect figure. And he's like, she knows how to rock a runway, but no man is gonna waste tissue on her, was the phrase he used, which I'm also disgusted at that. Scott is not, like, Scott sucks super bad. So Carlos is like getting angry, and you see his like fist clench, and then he throws this guy out the window, and Gabby's like, that's my guy. And I, at the end of it, found it kind of cute. I was like,
I thought it was cute.
All right Gabby and Carlos, I see you, but that's what's going on there. So
that's like the whole thing. Yeah, it's kind of a low stakes storyline, but I thought it was fun, and it was fun to see like their kind of toxic relationship in a cute way, if that makes sense. So there's like a lot of toxicity in how it was handled, but I liked seeing them like it work out for them. I guess it. I feel like that episode or this episode, we really got to see like why they became a couple in the first place.
Yeah, it was like, all super on brand for them. Mm-hmm. Loved it. So,
yeah.
I mean, they became a couple because she was dating some bozo. Like, that guy was such a bozo.
Fucking loser who has some shady, like, porn strip mall studio.
Yeah, it looked like it was in the valley. Like, it was bad.
Yeah.
But I'll let you cover Brie and her drinking problem.
Yeah. So this is actually one of my favorite storylines we're kind of getting into here. But so we talked about it earlier at the blood drive. Everybody was talking about the Applewhites, and they asked Brie if she could like reach out to the detective that thought she was a murderer. And Brie makes it seem like she's not going to do it. But next thing we know, she's at like lunch or dinner with him, Detective Barton. And she starts kind of like chatting with him. And basically he tells her that like he thought that they were on a date. Like, he thought that there was, like, a certain spark between them and that they were on a date and that, like, I don't know, that she might have had feelings for him. And she's like, oh, like, she gets really polite. She kind of does her Brie thing where she does, like, a really tight smile. And she's like, no, that's not it. Sorry. So she brings up the Applewhites and she tells him about, like, the dead body and everything and asks if he can...
I'm going to say, he's not turned on at all.
Yeah.
He's so put off.
Yes, he's very put off at this point. But basically, he's like, I can't dig into their private life just because they seem weird or eccentric. But also, I'm like, I feel like they're probably already investigating if there's a dead body found. Like, I don't know. Like,
in front of their house.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I don't know. But, so they, like, they have this dinner or whatever, and Bree is, you know, sipping on wine like one does on a dinner, quote-unquote, not date. And he tells her, he's like, let me drive you home. And she gets, like, she kind of assumes he's, like, being flirtatious, and she's like, oh, are you trying to get me in your bed or in your house? And he's like, no, you've been drinking, and I just, you know, I don't think you should drink and drive. And she's like,
it was, like, so assumptive.
Yeah, and he's like, oh, no. She's like, I had two glasses. And he's like, oh, well, you had three and then a port with dessert.
He's like, bitch, you had four.
Yeah, he's like, you low-key had a bottle of wine. Yeah. And Bree's like, no, like, you're just doing this because I turned you down. Like, you're just saying this because I rebuffed you and, like, all this shit. And he's like, no, like, I'm genuinely worried about you driving home. Like, I can't. Also, like, I legally kind of have to hold you accountable if I think you drank too much. Like, what the fuck? And so she's like, whatever. So she drives home anyways, and he pulls her over, and he tries to, like, tell her, like, you're weaving. Like, I don't know. Like, and she's like, no, like, this is harassment. Like, you're following me, all this shit. And I'm like, okay, Brie might have some PTSD, to be fair. But anyway, he is like, no, like, I need shocked. You. Yeah. He's like, I need you to take this breathalyzer. And she's like, hell no, not really. But people start to notice around her. And he's like, you have to. Like, I'm a fucking cop. Like, what are you doing? And she's just like, no, no, no. So he handcuffs her and takes her to the police station, at which she meets a very colorful prostitute who starts asking her, she's like, you have, like, no pores in your skin.
She thinks the sex worker thinks that Brie is, like, a call girl, like a high class call girl. And she's like, how much you charge a night? And Brie says $5,000.
She's like, what do you gotta do for $5,000? I'm like, oh my God. But yeah, so Brie, so she's freed on bail and she walks home, and Betty ends up, like, seeing her and offers to give her a ride. And Brie ends up telling her, like, what happened, that she was arrested for a DUI. And Betty is like, oh, I'm sorry. Like, I feel sorry for you. And, you know, I know that you guys are dealing with your husband's death and all this. She kind of, like, butters her up a little bit. And then my notes got chaotic here. Okay. So Brie then tells Betty how everyone's, like, kind of talking about how she and her son are weird, which I was like, I thought that was, like, a strange.
Well, Betty's like, it's okay if you are, like, drinking a lot. Like,
yeah,
you know, you've been through a lot. Like, it at first starts nicely. Like, I think Betty's, like, being kind of nice, like, because Brie's, like, embarrassed. She's like, don't tell anybody about it. It's a DUI. And Betty's like, it's okay. Like, if you're drinking a bit, like, you were stalked and your husband died and your son. And I thought Brie was going to find it. Like, she kind of reacted like the way she did to Layla, where she's like, what the fuck? And that's when she comes back at Betty and she's like, you and your son are fucking weird. Like, nobody knows anything about you. Why do you know all this about me and stuff? Well, and it's, like, invasive.
And Betty's kind of like, also, like, you don't just get arrested for a DUI. Like, that you have to have a certain blood alcohol level to qualify for a DUI. Like, there's no, like, the fact that she has a DUI is proof that she's fucking drinking too much in that sense.
Yeah, I mean, so, Betty kind of left her ass on the street. Like, Brie should be a little bit more grateful.
And I feel like Betty was kind of nice because she's, like, she's being empathetic. She's like, your son is having issues. Like, your husband died. Like, that's a lot. Like, I would be drinking too, essentially, is what she says. And Brie gets, like, fucking pissed. Like, she gets, like her mouth gets really tiny. She has that thing where she's like,
tiny mouth.
Yeah. And she's like, well, if you're going to be a little gossip about me. And she's like, I know, like, you moved here in the middle of the night. She basically pops off and says all the stuff that Edie kind of said at the blood drive. And, like, she's like, people hear, like, everything that she heard at the blood drive. And Betty gets, like, really worked up, and she calls Edie, and she says, or after Bree gets out, Betty calls Edie, and she's like, sorry to call you so late, but we need to meet, basically, to sell my house.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, yeah, and so that's kind of where that storyline ends.
Yeah. Yeah, and then Bree comes home from, like, shopping or something, and Detective Barton has left a message on her phone, answering machine, that ancient machine, and he says, I feel bad that I arrested you. I looked into the Apple, or that PI that, like, whatever, like, died, and, or the guy that died in front of the Apple White House, and it's a PI from Chicago.
Yeah.
And Bree's like, that's where Betty's from. Puts that together. Other than those main four ladies, Mike and Zach had a little bit going on. At the blood drive, Zach gets his blood drawn. He's like, AB something or other. And the chick is like, oh, so rare. But you're my second one today. And Zach's like, wait, what? And he's like, who else was it? And it was Mike has a type AB. So that happened. And
well, is the lady allowed to just tell him who has what blood type? I was like, what? I was like kind of shook by that. I was like,
no, she's not, but good for her. Just giving white people's medical information willy-nilly. And then Mike, I guess we bring back the dude that Mike used to work for. Truly don't remember his name, but he's dying, I guess. He's on his deathbed. I guess Mike says he's been coming every Sunday, but I see no proof of that. And so the dude's like, you're lying. You haven't been here every Sunday. Mm-hmm. And he's like, did you find the guy that killed Deidre, a.k.a. Paul? Because we found out that Mary Alice Young and Paul killed this chick. And Mike lies and said it was a dude named Todd, but whatever. I don't get it. He's a drug deal that tried to steal from her. Yeah, I definitely killed him. And this dad guy boss looks really unmoved. And he's like, I thought you'd be happy. And the guy's like, me too, but I'm not. And he he literally stabs his nurse with an IV and fires her on the spot after this. Yeah. And you're like, okay.
He like fucking goes for her. I was like, what the fuck? Like, yeah. That was weird.
And then he follows it up. He's like, Mike, get the fuck out of here. And he's like, are you? And then he's, yeah. And then he's like, are you going to come see me? He's like, Mike, get the fuck out. But also, are you going to come see me again? And Mike is like, are you going to like have an open casket? And this was like right after we got done with like the Jim Halverson scene at the beginning. And I was like, wow, Mike is way funnier than Jim without even fucking trying. That was a great joke.
That was great gallows humor. I like that.
Yeah. So that's what's going on with the boys over there. Mary Alice Young takes us out and she says, illness can take on many forms. Those of the body are easy to treat. Those more difficult are the hidden maladies that fester in our hearts, the secret addictions that consume our souls. Shout out Bree. And the diseases we deny that affect our judgment. To survive, we need to find that special someone that can heal us. And then we're back with Mike's old boss. And he's like, doing a monologue about like his daughters and his life and that no one's left for him and like what did I do it all for, and he's like talking, he's telling this all to the nurse, and then shocker, it's Mrs. Tillman. We forgot about her. What's up, Felicia? So
I was actually thinking today, well, before we watched the episode, like I was thinking about that, I was like, where is Felicia? Because she's technically still living in that house, right? We're still
yeah,
around.
That's, oh, no, I've been wondering that too. Yeah.
Or maybe she went away, but she wasn't like moving. So I was like, did they just like ship her character off? But
yeah, we saw a little bit of her a bit ago, like several whatever. She talked to Mike at one point. That's all I remember. But she's back, bitches. So yes, and that's that on that. But now it's time for our fuck, marry, kill.
Oh man,
I'll let you go first.
Oh shit, okay. I might kill Susan just because it was so painful watching everything she did in this episode.
True.
And I just like I was cringing so hard it almost sent me into, like, muscle spasms. I don't know. I just, like, couldn't handle it. So I think I'm going to kill Susan just because she's bugging me. I'm going to fuck Gabby. She has a nice bod. We already knew that, but just from the little glimpses, I was like, okay, I can get down. And then Mary, I'm like, who the fuck? I don't even know who I'd marry this episode. No one was, like, acting extra marriageable.
Wow. Are you taking a pass on that?
Maybe I'd... I don't fucking know. Maybe I'd marry Mike, just because he had that good joke.
Dang. I'm going to marry Mike as well. That was in my head. Mike seems like a good, like, he's visiting this guy every Sunday, supposedly. Like, he's got a good joke. Like, we love Mike. Mike's too good for Susan. So I'm going to have to choose to marry Mike as well. I'm going to fuck Jim Halverson because I don't think he did anything that wrong for Susan to hate him so much. And I do think that he was hotter than the doctor in a lot of ways.
Yeah, so. I thought he was fine. Just his jokes sucked.
And his jokes weren't that good. I don't know. They didn't have to paint him as such a loser at the beginning.
I know. Like, they're like, he's ugly. They might as well be like, he's ugly, he's poor, he's disgusting. I'm like, okay, then why would his friends, like, why does he even have friends?
Mary Alice, like, he has a small dick.
Yeah.
She's just going off on a receding hairline. Just really a tragic mess.
Yeah.
Like, so crazy. So
She straight up says he has nothing to offer.
I'd never even say that about, like, my worst enemies.
That was brutal. Like, that was so, I was like, shot to the heart. She fucking killed him.
I would fuck Jim Halverson. He's not that bad.
No, he's fine. So. For, like, a middle-aged guy, doing great, buddy.
If I saw him in a spin class, I'd be like, he's pretty hot. Like, yeah, he looks like an old guy you would see at the gym. Like, yeah. He looks pretty good. Like,
yeah.
So crazy. So I'd fuck him, marry Mike. And then I'm going to have to kill, for me, I'm really torn. I would choose to kill three people, but I'll narrow it down to one. I'm going to kill the sexual harassment, like, MRI tech guy. He was fucking weird. Don't like that he just let Susan undress.
Yeah, so, he's like low-key a sexual predator.
But if he's already dead for some reason, my second choice is Scott the photographer, because the best thing that ever happened to him was Gabby. So I don't understand why he's being so disrespectful to her years later and leaving her images up on a porn website, like, for all to see. Second choice, kill. Third choice, Susan, for obvious reasons. I don't even have to elaborate for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are my choices. It was a hard episode because...
Yeah, there weren't a lot of people that were, like, outright aggressively shitty. Like, we had no one fucking with someone's, like, birth control pills. But, like, no one was, like, especially, like, on it. I don't know. I feel like everybody was a little lit this episode or something.
Everybody was lame. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, tough times. I think it's time for a housewife of the week. This is also a tough one because everybody was doing a dismal performance in terms of being good people. But once again, I'm going to have to nominate Gabby because she manipulated Carlos into getting what she wanted. And I think at the end of the day, they had a loving moment from it. So,
yeah, she did. I agree. You're right.
I say this with an eye roll, but, like,
I know.
It's like, it's, I don't know what the word for it is, but it's kind of a gimme. Like, Gabby had to take it because nobody else did anything.
Yeah. I agree.
So that's that. And I know, I feel so, well, we'll get into this because now we've arrived at our Apple rating. So
yeah.
I can explain why my tone of voice is so sullen.
All right.
Okay. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. 3, 2, 1. 3.25.
I was going to say 3.25, but I just went with 3.
I was thinking about 3, but I gave some, like, gimmies to a couple other episodes where I gave them 3.5s. And I didn't want to, like, give this too low of marks. But Susan's whole storyline infuriated me, so...
I wanted to fast forward through it. Like, that's how boy. It was worse than the Apple Whites. I'd rather watch the Apple Whites than
whatever. I'd rather watch the Apple Whites. Also, we have no closure on, like, Danielle and Matt, like, after they went on their date. Remember when they met in the park and nothing happened?
I'm like, who's Danielle?
Yeah. I like that Brie has this storyline and will now have to deal with problems about being an alcoholic, for sure.
I actually, I think Brie's story, like, they set up a good storyline for her. Gabby's storyline was super forgettable. Lynette's storyline was whatever. Susan's was stupid. For once, the Applewhites, I guess, weren't stupid, but it was just Betty. We never really even saw Matthew.
Yeah, we don't get any Paul or, like, Zach. There's, like, a moment of him. Mike, bringing that guy back is so random. Like, haven't thought about him in ages. Just, like, everything. Mm-hmm. Like, it just didn't move me. I thought the theme was stupid. Like, they could have done so much more with illness and sickness. Mm-hmm. Instead, they were like, racism. The Applewhites are it. They were like, the Applewhites are a sickness.
Yeah. Like,
so it made me mad. And so it gets low marks. And I am worried about the rest of the season continuing in this fashion.
Yeah. So. I think, like, it's just a really choppy... It's just choppy. I feel like we were actually kind of off to a good start. And then it's like they just kind of didn't know what to do with everybody. Like, that's what I feel like is happening right now. They just don't know what to do with everybody.
It was a super strong start. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed the first, like, 7 episodes or so. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought there were some bangers in there. And I didn't, like, George Williams' death episode pretty good. But it just... This was so bad. So halfway through, this marks our halfway point. I'm hoping it improves from here, but I'm not going to, like, you know, risk it. I'm not going to, like, bet money on that.
Well, I know what storylines are still going to happen this season, and I know you're going to, like, it's going to get, like, you're going to like some of them. But I'm just like, damn, when the fuck do they start? I'm like, we've got a lot of, like, dead, like, basic-ass storylines right now.
Yeah, but lessons learned this episode are maybe just, like, don't try and be funny if you're not.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be so desperate that you make up an illness. Like, don't lie to your doctor to date him, especially if he's so average.
Don't build up, like, a $100,000 hospital bill to get a young, cute doctor.
Don't ask your partner to do something with their body when you could just talk about your feelings instead.
Yes. I agree with that.
And don't post nude. Don't, like, take a photo shoot of yourself for an ex in a Santa outfit.
Yeah.
Just don't. Just don't do a nude photo shoot for them.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
No, it's
be risky. Careful.
But... Yeah, so lots of lessons. We also saw Sister Mary Alice Young. She's in Modern Family. If you guys all want.
Wait, Sister what?
Mary, Mary Alice. Wait, what's her name? Mary Bernard?
Yeah, you said Sister Mary Alice Young. I was like, at first I was like, are you calling Mary Alice like sis? Like, why are you referring to her like that? I'm like, Sister Gabby. Are they all sisters now?
Sister Gabby.
Oh, yeah. Sister Mary Bernard. I saw her in an episode of Modern Family the other day.
Yeah, so shout out.
Glad to see she's still working.
Still working, unlike Nina. Dang, RIP. Still missing her. But, yeah, we'll be back next Monday. We drop these episodes every Monday. If you're new here, if you've... been along for the ride, you know that already.
Mm-hmm.
And next week we'll be watching episode 13, just chugging along here. Hope it's better than this one. In the meantime, if you miss us this week, you can certainly go like, rate, and review us wherever that's an option for you.
Mm-hmm.
And we're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, etc., wherever you get your podcasts. Our Instagram is where we are most active, so check us out there for some content. We'd love to hear from you, your stories, your desperate deeds, your thoughts. We are happy to hear it all. And yeah, we also have Twitter. Go ahead, reach out to us on Twitter as well.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, did I miss anything?
No, I think you got it all.
Yes. Well, we'll leave you with our words of wisdom to know your neighbors.
Know your neighbors.